In 1950, Canadian government senior radio engineer Wilbert B. Smith wrote to the Controller of Telecommunications in the Department of Transport requesting for Canada to begin its first official investigation into UFOs, specifically studying complex magnetism as a form of propulsion. In this letter, Smith makes four astounding claims told to him by a source within Washington regarding UFOs. 1. The matter is the most highly classified subject in the United States government, rating even higher than the H-bomb. 2. Flying saucers exist. 3. Their modus operandi is unknown, but concentrated effort is being made by a small group headed by Dr. Vannevar Bush. And 4. The entire matter is considered by the United States authorities to be of tremendous significance. That very same year, Canada actually began its first official investigation into UAP, Project Magnet. But this isn't our topic for today. In fact, I want to dive into the curious connections of Wilbert B. Smith's source, one Dr. Robert I. Sarbacher. Hey guys, it's UAP Gerb. Thank you so much for joining me today. Let's investigate the astonishing claims and connections of one Dr. Robert Sarbacher, physicist, student of Einstein, and consultant to the DoD's Research and Development Board in the 1950s under the Truman administration. Sarbacher may just have the keys and knowledge to help us understand the early days of the USG's feverish obsession with UFOs and crash retrieval efforts. Quickly, who was Dr. Robert Sarbacher? Sarbacher was an esteemed physicist and student of Albert Einstein that graduated from Harvard. He served as the founder and dean of the Washington Institute of Technology, scientific consultant to the U.S. Marines, and as mentioned earlier, involved in the Joint Research and Development Board. His research was specifically remote controlling rockets. Close to the doctor's passing in 1987, researcher D.M. Duncan located Sarbacher's son, Robert Jr. Jr. said his father spoke sparingly about the UFO phenomenon, but the youth would occasionally question his father. In Jr.'s words, quote, "He knew that they were real for the obvious reason that they would be going 600 miles per hour and then make a 90-degree turn in mid-air without slowing down, separated from all inertia and gravity. Dad said that the reason he was called in to build the right kind of missile to track these things, since they were way too fast for any of our planes to catch. They wanted the missile to not destroy any of the UFOs, but to be able to track them. So Dad had cameras installed, like on the V-2 rockets, so when the UFO comes into our space, he would shoot missiles at them with cameras on them, since only a missile could keep up with the speed turns." As we know with Lieutenant Robert Jacobs and the UFO disabling a dummy nuclear warhead, UFOs do have an interest in ballistic missiles. So is there any way we confirm Sarbacher's claims about the V-2 rocket to begin to lend him some credibility? In fact, we can look directly to 1949's Project Twinkle, a project tasked with observing UFOs, specifically green fireballs, alongside Project Grudge. On page 33 of the report, we could find an incident from August 31st, 1950, where the phenomenon was observed after a V-2 rocket launch. Following this sighting, plans were set in place from Holloman Air Force Base to attempt to pursue the objects and get photos at close range. And we can head over to the White Sands Missile Range in the 1940s, where we can take a look at the experience of Master Sergeant Lloyd Eugene Camp, a radar operator at the missile range. Camp performed high-level research on the captured German V-2 rockets. According to Camp, and this is documented in the following report that has been pretty torn up, once a V-2 was launched and two UFOs appeared alongside the missile, Camp observed the craft via both visual and radar confirmation. He observed two silver discs circling the rocket for several minutes before the UFOs turned on their sides and accelerated away at an astonishing rate. And according to Camp's daughter, her father had seen similar events several times. We could also look at some claims made by former U.S. New Mexico State Rep. J. Andrew Kistner, but all I wanted to do here was prove that while we can't definitively link Sarbacher's research to photographing UFOs from V-2s, we can see multiple instances where V-2 rockets and UFOs intersect. The matter is the most highly classified subject in the US government, rating higher even than the H-bomb. Flying saucers exist. Their modus operandi is unknown, but concentrated effort is being made by a small group headed by Dr. Vannevar Bush. And the entire matter is considered by the US state authorities to be of tremendous significance. These are incredibly bold claims for Wilbert to relay from a source within Washington to the Canadian government, which directly led to the formation of Canada's two official UFO investigations, Project Magnet, which studied the possibility of reverse engineering UFO magnetic propulsion concepts to exploit Earth's magnetic field as a propulsion source, and Project Second Story, which sought to recommend UFO action to the Canadian government. In fact, Canada has always seemed to be close on the heels of US UFO research, like in 2023, when Canadian Parliament member Larry Maguire wrote to the Canadian Minister of Defense to discuss research and development of recovered UAP material in conjunction with retrieval operations of the Five Eyes nations. Wilbert's source of these statements was Robert Sarbacher, but how do we know that? Well, besides a direct confirmation in 1983 from Sarbacher himself, which I will touch on soon, historian Arthur Bray uncovered both the 1950 Department of Transport memo and Smith's meeting notes with Robert Sarbacher in the late engineer's estate. The following handwriting is horrendous, and the following is a transcription of Wilbert Smith's meeting with Dr. Robert that led to the 1950s memo. I'm not going to spend time reading through the entire conversation, but there are a couple things I'd like to comment on in the memo, specifically the mention of Frank Scully and Dr. Vannevar Bush. Wilbert mentions that he has read the book Behind the Flying Saucers, released by Frank Scully in 1950, which Sarbacher claims the contents of the book are fundamentally correct. And it's worth noting, Scully publicized the now contentious and famous alleged 1949 Aztec New Mexico crash, and discusses the case at length within the book. Now guys, I have my reservations about this case, and I am saving judgment until I sit down and discuss more with a trusted friend who has tirelessly investigated Aztec, but it is worth noting, this book framed a straightforward interpretation of flying saucers. Scully does discuss some pretty controversial information here, but the book is a fantastic read, and of course, I'll list it in the show notes. Sarbacher told Wilbert the study of UFOs in the United States government was done by a small group spearheaded by Dr. Vannevar Bush, who was at this time the chairman of the Research and Development Board to which Sarbacher belonged, and the chairman for the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics, which would later become NASA. Vannevar seems to be steeped in UFO lore. In fact, the origin of the infamous MJ-12 documents can be traced back to Vannevar Bush's creation of the Joint Research and Development Board established in 1941, which consisted of, you guessed it, 12 members. I don't necessarily want to get into this can of worms that is the Majestic 12 right now, seeing as this heap of documents whose contents seem to be a mishmash of forged documents with some possibly real documents or data spliced in. However, I do promise that one day I will cover these. The documents specifically quote briefing document Operation Majestic 12, specifically states Dr. Bush was a member of the team tasked by Truman to investigate crashed UAP. In 1983, UFO researcher William Steinman wrote to Dr. Sarbacher wishing to discuss UFOs. On November of 83, Sarbacher replied with a truly startling letter. In his response, the doctor responded to a series of 12 questions prompted by William. The doctor outright states he had no association with any of the people involved in recoveries, nor did he know of the dates of UFO crash recoveries. Sarbacher was, however, invited to participate in several discussions regarding recoveries on the R&D board, but was not given access to personally attend. But he did restate that Vannevar Bush was definitely involved, alongside John von Neumann and Dr. J. Robert Oppenheimer. Dr. Sarbacher did not receive any photographs of UFOs, but did in fact view official reports whilst in his Pentagon office. In the direct quote from Sarbacher, quote, "About the only thing I remember at this time is that certain materials reported to have come from flying saucer crashes were extremely light and very tough. I am sure our laboratories analyzed them very carefully. There were reports that instruments or people operating these machines were also very lightweight, sufficient to withstand the tremendous deceleration and acceleration associated with their machinery. I remember in talking with some of the people at the office that I got the impression these quote-unquote aliens were constructed like certain insects we have observed on Earth, wherein because of the low mass, the inertial forces involved in operation of these instruments would be quite low. I still do not know why the high order of classification has been given and why the denial of the existence of these devices. I am willing to bet, and I'm sure I'm not the only one thinking this, but the discussion of very lightweight and tough materials immediately draws my mind to the Roswell crash. What lends even more credence to this is the study of lightweight shape metal alloys as conducted by Battelle in 1949. If you have not watched that video, I highly suggest giving it a view, as there I directly correlate recovered wreckage from Roswell to the secret Battelle contracted work on Nitinol. Quote, "I got the impression these aliens were constructed like certain insects we have observed on Earth," end quote. This stands out to me almost more than anything else. Interesting to use the word alien in quotations, as if the doctor isn't ready to finalize this NHI origin. Especially now in 2024, where many of us view the phenomenon as likely more than just an extraterrestrial origin. But the insectoid description is unsettling and bizarre. In that same year of 1983, legendary UFO researcher Stanton Friedman learned of the 1950 Wilbert Smith memo and tracked down Sarbacher. The following conversation will play on screen, however, I'll be covering what stands out to me. After some pleasantries, the two quickly begin talking about UFOs. Sarbacher touches back to the insectoid beings, discussing a meeting at Wright Field about a crash, where, quote, "But later on, one of the fellows said to me that those guys, if they were people, were made like insects. They didn't have any skin on their bodies. So they were saying that's how they were able to accelerate and decelerate without being torn apart," end quote. So these beings recovered, presumably Roswell, with even greater confidence now that Wright Field and the crash occurring out west has been mentioned, seemingly had inertial dampening capabilities built into their bodies. When pressed for why Sarbacher told Smith the UFO subject was classified even higher than the H-bomb, the doctor alludes to several crash recoveries. Friedman presses to see if the crash Sarbacher is referring to occurred in 1947, as presumably Oppenheimer would have been involved. Sarbacher responds, "Very likely." And here we get to the most important part of this conversation. Stanton asked who attended this meeting at Wright Field. Sarbacher states, quote, "I remember there was one guy. Frankly, I didn't like him very much. He had some company as I had. Seemed to me he was from Philadelphia, and he was going to all the meetings, and acting very smug about it." This would later be revealed to be Dr. Eric A. Walker, who I will talk about shortly. Later on in the conversation, the two talk about the deep interest in UAP flight characteristics occurring in the 1950s. Sarbacher and the R&D board were fascinated by the objects that flew at great speeds and in formation. I'm thinking this might be a reference to the 1951 Lubbock's Lights case. At the time, the DoD board was perplexed at how they worked, what they were made of, how they could go so fast, and how they could seemingly instantaneously accelerate. Sarbacher had assumed at this time a manipulation of gravity would unlock the doors behind UFO flight characteristics. We can skip the rest of this conversation as it covers the doctor's business ventures and setting up of the Washington Institute of Technology. As uncovered in the Friedman call, Dr. Eric A. Walker was listed as one of the Wright Field members discussing crash retrievals. And now we get into a very interesting figure named by Robert Sarbacher. Before we dive into the many connections with Eric and UFOs, who was Dr. Walker? Walker was the former president of Penn State University from 56 to 71, a member of many defense boards, including the chairman for the Institute for Defense Analysis and the executive secretary of the Defense Research Board from 50 to 51. So this is a very serious and accredited man. His biography is far more detailed and fascinating, so I do recommend checking that out in the video description. After his name became publicly known by Friedman, Walker was approached by a number of researchers, including William Steinman and Habib Henry Azadehel, pseudonym for Armin Victorian, began questioning Eric about his involvement in the phenomenon. I will cover these all more in a little detail, But directly according to Walker, he was involved in the 1965 Kecksburg, Pennsylvania crash. Confirm the existence of the Majestic 12 or a similar group, discuss that contact had been made with NHI, and that reverse engineering efforts were a waste of time, due to the technology being far beyond human understanding. Walker's first interview was conducted with William Steinman, kicking off the investigation mentioned above. In this interview, Walker directly confirms he attended the meeting around 1949-1950, as described by Sarbacher concerning military crash and body retrieval efforts. Walker tells William he will attempt to find and contemplate sharing his notes on the Wright-Patt meeting. Since this interview took place mere weeks after Friedman made the MJ-12 documents public, of course Steinman inquires about the legitimacy of the Majestic 12. Quote, "Yes, I know of MJ-12. I have known of them for 40 years. I believe that you're chasing after and fighting with windmills." End quote. Curiously, Walker recommends Steinman drop the subject because he is, quote, "delving into an area that you can do absolutely nothing about." In 1990, Walker conducted a series of three recorded calls with Dr. Henry Victorian. In these interviews, the two discuss some fascinating topics such as the 1978 Bolivia UFO crash, which I covered in my Moondust video, and the possibility of insect-like bodies being recovered. In the second interview, Walker outright asserts while the MJ-12 exists, that documents are likely forgeries. Dr. Eric tells Victorian, quote, "couple people are capable of handling this issue. Unless your mind ability is like Einstein's or likewise, I do not think you can achieve anything," end quote. What is fascinating in this second interview is the cryptic tone Walker takes when asked about his involvement in studying UFOs. Quote, "how good is your sixth sense? How much do you know about ESP? Unless you know about it and how to use it, you would not be taken in. Only a few know about it," end quote. The third interview covers more of the same topics, but with Walker talking even more cryptically. However, Walker also confirms Bush's involvement within the program. Around 1991, investigation into Walker showed him to be positioned as Penn State president around 100 miles near Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. In this town, a small bell-shaped, almost like an acorn UFO, allegedly crashed in 1965. This case is fascinating, and I'll cover it in more detail in the future as it warrants its own full analysis. But in short, Walker directly confirms, quote, "we went there with two from the military, but not on duty," end quote. And this is, of course, in reference to the UFO crash site. From Sarbacher and Dr. Eric Walker, we have discussed so much of crash retrievals and some sort of significant meeting that occurred in 1950 at Wright Field that served to discuss UFO crash operations. Well, interestingly enough, we do have a relevant document to analyze from this same year, the Hoddle Memo. On March 22, 1950, FBI agent Guy Hoddle wrote to FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover, relaying information from an Air Force investigator. My guess is ATIC, or the Air Force Technical Intelligence Center. Remember back to my Battelle investigation. In 1952, ATIC commissioned Battelle for Project Stork, a parallel project to Blue Book not known to the public, to investigate UFOs and, quote, "assist the Air Force in reassuring the public that everything is well under control with respect to the UFO problem." Anyways, this investigator stated three flying saucers had been recovered in New Mexico. The craft were circular with raised centers and measured near 50 feet in diameter. The craft were occupied by humanoid-looking figures measuring 3 feet tall dressed in metallic suits. According to one Mr. Carl Howe, the discs were found in New Mexico due to high-powered radar, and a likely cause of craft crashing was due to this radar's interference with control mechanisms. Does this memo link with the retrieval discussion meeting both Sarbacher and Walker stated to have taken place in 1950 at Wright Field? And is this memo discussing the Roswell crash, which occurred 3 years prior to this memo? Hey guys, thank you so much for joining me today for this look into Robert Sarbacher, his connections, and his claims. Let me get things out of the way. I gotta say, I'm sorry in case things sounded weird during the video. Partway through filming, my brother came in town to visit and got me extremely ill, so if I sound off, it's due to the congestion, but no worries. I hope you found this dive into Sarbacher interesting. I'm thinking back to Eric Walker and his interviews with William Steinman. And when Steinman brings up Majestic 12, because remember, around this time in the early 80s, all the buzz was going around about these Majestic 12 documents because Stanton Friedman had released these documents. Walker tells Steinman he is chasing and trying to fight windmills. I can't help but think back to the story of Don Quixote in this context. Is Walker basically telling Steinman him trying to investigate the MJ-12 docs, he's chasing ghosts, fighting things that aren't there, and looking in the wrong direction and fooling himself? It's interesting because in that same sentence he says he knew about the MJ-12 documents for 40 years. And throughout this video with Starbucker and with Walker, we see the MJ-12 pop up numerous times. This is why I want to cover these documents so much, because while many of these documents are forgeries, like I said earlier in the video, there is some interesting aspects, data, or possibly even some documents in these that may be legitimate. I think when we look at this time period, the 50s, and even the early 60s, we only really think about Project Blue Book, Project Grudge, Project Sign, Washington DC 1952 UFOs incident, and we hardly ever try and analyze the kind of the program, finding crash retrievals and reverse engineering. And I think we finally get a little bit of a look into that with Robert Starbucker. I know investigating his case was super interesting because I knew about the 1950 Wilbert B. Smith memo for a while. But let me know what you guys think. Do you think Starbucker's claims are accurate? Especially about this meeting that occurred in 1949 to 1950 at Wright Field about crash retrievals and reverse engineering efforts, that this gave him the confidence to outright tell Wilbert B. Smith that the study of UFOs and flying saucers within the USG was classified even higher than the H-bomb. Again, guys, thank you so much for joining me today. I'd like to thank every single one of you for being here. Please remember to like and subscribe. If you're enjoying the channel, hey, don't hesitate to join that Patreon. Again, I'm not going to gatekeep any of my content. Everything out here is free for everybody to enjoy, but only support what you think the channel's worth. And if any of you guys are watching UFC 300 this weekend, let me know what you guys think. I personally can't wait. This is the best card of all time. You know I'm rocking with my boys Jamal Hill, Charles Oliveira, Justin Gaethje, and Yuri Prohaska. So I'm going to be watching that. I can't wait. I really want to know what you guys think. So I'll catch everybody on the next video, and thank you so much for joining me.